Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
They say plants like music. Yeah, no, like really, they respond to the vibrations of it, which means that this playlist you're listening to, the plants are too. You know what else plants like? Organic soil from Miracle-Gro. It's made with all the best stuff like wood fiber and compost. Plus, it's OMRI certified organic, which officially means it's made with superior ingredients. And when you give your plants the stuff that makes them happy, they won't judge you on your iffy playlist.
Hear that, plants?
So go ahead and give them Miracle-Gro.
Because I'm intelligent and smart, and there are some things that just come very natural to me, it also makes other people intimidated. And so for me, to hear people say, well, there's not that many, I'm like, dang, I got 52 girlfriends, and, 50 of them are in STEM. Nothing ever made social media. And I was like, why am I tucking my life away for other people? I know my worth. Like, I'm worth every problem you gonna have with me. I'm worth every argument. I'm worth all of that.
This is The Secret Lives of Black Women. I'm Lauren.
I'm Sharla. And today we're talking about how to date when you're a badass.
You know, this is something as someone who's... actively is actually the wrong word because I'm so not dating because I'm so done with the bullshit. But some of the bullshit is it's hard to date when you're a badass and dealing with men who are intimidated by your perceived success or just, I'm a vibrant people person in the world. And I feel like sometimes
Absolutely.
I've been on dates where it's just, it's really hard because people are like, no, you should be paying more attention to me or I have to be the center of your focus. Or they'll go, I was once on a date, they'll go in the opposite end. And the guy was like, what do you do? And I was like, oh, I work in film. And then it just became this like thing of like, but what do you do in film? Like, how can I get connected? How can I like get in?
Gross.
You must be so, do you know this person? Do you know? And it just was so gross. And I was like, shit, do I need to change my profession on like all the dating apps so I like don't have to like talk about. Have you ever had that? Like,
you need
just
to change dude, the
just, like,
dude.
Change the dude. Yeah, change. Have you ever had that though where someone was just like either your... I felt threatened, frankly, by your success or your moves in the world.
Yeah, I have. And, I drop those people very quick because I immediately get a horrible feeling about them. And I'm just like, oh, if you're like this in this situation, then you're going to be the worst in every other situation. Like, I might have mentioned it before, but I did go on a date with a dude and I just started comedy and I told him that I wanted to be a comedian. And he told me that that was stupid. That was his words verbatim. And I stopped seeing that guy because I couldn't believe anyone would say that to another person.
Have the audacity to tell someone your dreams are stupid.
And we hardly knew each other at the time. But, and I mean, that's the way that I gauged current bae and whether or not he would be a good person to be with because I knew that I would be in front of people. And I remember our first date, I brought him to my show. I had a show at UCB East and I was screening my web series at the time. So this was like really a time where I was like really trying to be like, hey, I'm out here. Look at me. You know, this is what I'm doing. And after the show, I was talking to all of the guests that were on the show and I was, cavorting and laughing it up and like just doing my thing as the show producer and the person who just screened this thing and being the center of attention. And he just sat back real quiet. He didn't try to get in. He didn't try to introduce himself. He just waited for me to finish. He didn't make me feel rushed. He looked like he was enjoying the fact that he was just seeing me in my element. And afterwards, we talked about it, and he told me that it was a great show and all this, and we just hung out. And I was just like, whoa, that was really great. You just let me have my time and have my moment, and you didn't seem intimidated
by it. He loves and encourages
it.
The fact that you're a boss.
He does. He really tries to, like...
Goals.
He really just, like, makes me be more of a boss.
Yeah. Speaking of dating when you're a badass, I feel like today we have the perfect person to talk about dating when you're a badass because she is a rocket scientist. She works at NASA. Today's guest is Dr. K. Renee Horton. She's from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, which you know. Deep in my heart.
Of course.
Louisiana. She currently serves as the Space Launch Quality Engineer at the NASA Residential Management Office at the Michoud Assembly Facility in New Orleans.
In 2016, Dr. Horton was elected president of the National Society of Black Physicists as the second woman to hold the office. She has been an invited speaker for the first International Women and Girls Day at the United Nations, Essence Power Stage, March for Science New Orleans, and the LSU Engineering Spring Commencement.
And she's also a children's book writer. Like, she does so many amazing things in addition to, you know, working at NASA. Just
being a rocket scientist.
Just being throwing that out in conversation. I work at NASA. And she's joining us today over the phone. And I'm really excited to also say that it was Dr. Horton's idea to talk about dating. She was like, yeah. People talk to me a lot about STEM, but what did she tell you, Charlotte?
She's like, I want to talk about dating. And she's out here.
She's out here
dating. And she wants to tell us her experiences as a rocket scientist.
As a rocket scientist in these streets, yeah. Dating over 40. And I'm ready to dive in. Let's hear all about it. You work at NASA.
Yeah. Like, we need context.
First of all, I think it's a huge thing to, like, you know, outside of, like, Hidden Figures, we don't see a lot about, like, Black women in STEM, Black women scientists, Black women who are leading us to the new frontier of space. So I would love to know about how did you know that you wanted to be an engineer that led you to this job at NASA and literally helping us get to Mars?
So when I was growing up, I was really fascinated with the stars after my dad gave me a telescope. I'm talking about just in awe of the universe and what was out there. And I was a real sciencey girl anyway. And my father then would send me during the summers to the LSU enrichment courses. And so I got to, one summer, I got to cut open a turtle with its heart beating. And I learned how to dissect, and not little things either. It was like big things because it was the vet program. I learned about coding early and realized I was not a computer girl. But I always, always had a love for the universe, always. And I'm one of those believers that we're not it. Mm-hmm. I have a religious base. And so I don't believe God would have just created us on Earth and then stopped. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Coming from you, that's very legit.
Yeah. And I do think that there's other things out there. I believe in parallel universes. I believe in dimensional time as well.
What is dimensional time?
Dimensional time is that you can be in more than one place at one time. It's just that it's not that. You ever feel like you have a deja vu moment?
Yes. Yes. That's what dimensional
time is. To me, that's my dimensional time. Okay. It's like you've already done it. So that means that part of you have already been there or already traveled there. So that's my whole thing. So I started college at 16, found out at 17 that I had a significant hearing loss, and the path that I had originally decided to take was to go through the Air Force, become a pilot, and then apply for astronaut candidacy. And when I found out that I had the hearing loss, I couldn't. Like, I watched the guy mark a big red X on my paper to say I was rejected. And it was like, I didn't really know anything because as geeky, nerdy Black women, girls, you know, you get your focus and that's your focus. And unfortunately, we be highly intelligent and we also highly sexual. And so I took my sad self, came back home, and my boyfriend was good looking at the time. Girl, he played football. Like, he was tall, dark, and handsome. If he hear me talking about him now, he going to be like, I told you your mama still want me. He was gorgeous to me because he was, like, dark like a raisin dark.
Nice.
And came home. We got pregnant, though, that day. We got pregnant while I was sad. And my dad, being from the South, was like, y'all going to get married. And we got married. We weren't really compatible intellectually, though. But we was good everywhere else, and we got pregnant again.
So
we got these two boys, and then we realized, like, marriage wasn't for us, We separated, and then I got pregnant with my daughter. And when my daughter was born, they gave her to me, and she was absolutely beautiful as a baby, you know. But I was looking at her, and I realized right then that I was not fulfilling my own life, right? And so went back to school with three kids. The really cool thing about that was that all of my graduate work was on NASA fellowships.
That's
so
great.
It was like my life was coming back full circle before I even realized it, right? And worked there during the summers, so a year and a half as a student, and 8 months after graduation, they called me up and offered me a job. I didn't interview for a job. They offered me a position.
How did you navigate raising three children, having a social life, and getting your PhD?
So see, all that didn't go together. So I actually pledged graduate chapter for Delta Sigma Theta Sorority. Holla. And that became my social life. And during the time I was getting my PhD, my little brother moved up and he became the nanny.
That's great.
So he helped just with all the logistics of the children, making sure people got places. My oldest at 16 got his driver's license, got a car, and we started moving around like that. The last 2 years was really rough for us, though.
I want to know what you did in between that time when you failed the pilot's test and had your baby girl. Like, what were you doing, like, for work? And
I was being a wife.
Mm.
That was okay. I found out everything's not for everybody, right? And as much as I would like to be a wife now, at that moment and during that time, I needed more than what I had. I needed to be intellectually stimulated, right? But all the jobs I had were just run-of-the-mill, everyday jobs. And I worked for some people who were not very smart. And it was that made me really decide this was, like, not for me. I needed to be where my passion and my calling was.
That's amazing.
That is amazing. I am like, before we get to dating,
because we know we're gonna get there.
We're gonna get to dating.
No, we don't get there.
No, we are. But I like, because I think it's just so rare to see like a Black woman in the sciences, and I think that they're more out there than we get the opportunity to see or interact with. And I just would love to talk to you about your experience of being like a Black woman who works in this field.
Well, you know, and it's a crazy thing when I hear that, and I always have to constantly remind myself, not everybody has access to the people that I have access to,
yeah.
Right? And so for me, to hear people say, well, there's not that many, I'm like, dang.
That we know of.
Yeah, you know, and it's like, dang, I got 52 girlfriends, and, you know, 50 of them are in STEM.
Nice.
And so it's like, I always hear that, but there are a lot of us. I'm sitting up here thinking, and at least 15 of my very close.
Hi, it's Martha Stewart. You know, I spend a lot of time thinking about dirt at 3 a.m., at all hours of the day, really. What people don't know is that not all dirt is the same. You need dirt with the right kind of nutrients. New Miracle-Gro organic raised bed and garden soil is so dense, so full of nutrient-rich, high-quality ingredients. Miracle-Gro is simply the best.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Want to connect with a family member who doesn't speak your language? Then check out the language learning program Rosetta Stone on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone is designed to immerse you in the language you're learning through an intuitive process. Plus, the True Accent feature even gives you feedback on your pronunciation. And with a lifetime membership, you have access to all 25 offered languages. Get started today. Visit rosettastone.com/pod50 to get 50% off your lifetime membership now. That's rosettastone.com/pod50 for 50% off.
Female friends are in some type of STEM. Of that 15, right off, I can say at least 8 of them have PhDs in hard science or
that's
more.
Amazing.
God damn.
So like we get together and things are very, sometimes very analytical, like when we actually get together before the liquor and then afterward, right. It's not. But
I love it.
You make this sound very run of the mill. Like a rocket like, scientist is just like being like a waitress so, you know, or like a podcaster.
Melt things for our space systems.
Yeah. It's normal.
But it really is just run of the mill. I just lucked up and I'm working on an amazing rocket.
What rocket are you working on right now?
So I'm working on the Space Launch System, and that particular mission is called Artemis 1. And I always have to tell this part, but Artemis is Apollo's twin sister.
Oh, cool.
So it is a woman that is going to take us back to the moon.
You better tell them.
So, yeah, I'm really excited. And actually, we have Artemis Day, and we are getting a really big award for NASA, the team that I worked on for engine integration.
Congratulations.
Congratulations, yeah.
Thank you.
So what advice would you give for a young listener who's interested in a career in STEM or has always dreamed of working at NASA?
So to work for NASA right now, you have to go through what they call the Pathways Program. And the Pathways Program is where when you're in college, you would do an internship. That's the main way that they're hiring right now. That could change. The way when I came in, I was on fellowships and had the opportunity to work during the summer. And then my mentor, who turned out to be a white male, and the reason I say that is because sometimes you have to have a sponsor in the door. And he was my sponsor because he wrote a letter of recommendation that brought me to tears.
Oh, that's amazing.
Just talking about my skill, my talent, and that kind of thing. But that's also a little voodoo for me, right? A little bad because I'm intelligent and smart, and there are some things that just come very natural to me. It also makes other people intimidated when I'm working in their area as well, right? So for them, I would say you have to be in a STEM field. And so you want to hard sciences do better because we have two ratings. We have a non-AST, and the AST is for an aerospace engineer. And then there's a AST, which is aerospace engineer. And so sometimes the positions are very different. But it just depends, because if you were an artist and wanted to work for NASA, you could. Mm-hmm. If you were a computer scientist, you could. If you were a business person, you could. We do procurement. We have lawyers who work for us. So there are plenty of ways to actually go down that route to work for NASA. It just depends on what you want out of it.
You mentioned being smart and things coming naturally to you, making people intimidated. Do you carry yourself in a different way? Like, do you sense it when you walk in a room? Like, how do you deal with that?
So there are some mornings that I wake up and God has turned on my light and it's so bright that I don't have no choice but to walk in the room and walk.
Yes!
I could crawl in the room, right?
Right.
And it would be like, oh, Renee is here.
Right.
I used to duck down and hide away from that. And I just realized, like, it's not worth it to actually duck down and hide what he's given me. I'm doing a disservice to God.
Right.
Yes.
I tried to hide my light. Now I do things a little bit differently when I know like, my team lead or someone like that is insecure with me, then I do handle them a little bit differently. And I don't mind doing that because I want everybody to be successful. I'm really a team oriented person. And if we're all focused on team, then we can all get there.
Speaking of people just being intimidated with you, you know, we want to talk to you about dating. You want to talk to us about dating.
I
think we should take a quick break.
Okay.
We should take a quick break. We're going to take a break and we're going to come back and we're going to just jump right in. And we're back.
And I actually have a question I want to bring back when you were talking about being a wife and how that wasn't for you. And I wanted to know what that experience was like, because I'm a wife and I think it's a term that can kind of be retired. I think it's old and the expectations of it are unreasonable and sexist. And it sets up expectations in the household that are unfair. So what was your experience like, and like what happened that made you be like, this ain't me?
You know, and I'm kind of feeling what you just said, right? Because it was like, I think if we had stopped to talk about, but we were young, we were 18 and 19, right? But I think if we had actually stopped and talked about what our expectations were for the other, right? We would have done a lot better versus this is the expectation for husband and this is the expectation for wife.
Yeah. I found like when I got married, the expectations from other people of what it meant for me to be a wife were I won't say overwhelming, but like I resented it. I was just like, why is everybody so concerned about what I do? like being married became this thing where you were it became very public. It wasn't about like just me and this person anymore. Now it's about like other people's expectations of us now that we have this label. I found it very stupid.
And draining.
Yes. And mostly draining. For me, not as much for him. Yeah. Like the expectations for him were like, just be a dick. just like swing your dick and be a guy and like, you're great. Thanks for being here. And me, it was like, well, you're not doing this for him. You're not getting his plate. You're not doing that. And that's cultural too, because I'm Haitian and we're Caribbean and there's certain expectations of how you treat your husband. But I was just like, he could literally chill and do and just exist.
And me, like crushing it.
The bar for me is high as far as servitude.
It's in the South like that, right? Mm-hmm. So coming from the South, even the guy I date right now, like, my mom then was like, you gonna fix this plate? And I was looking at him like, ooh.
He has arms.
He was like, babe, just fix the plate. Because it creates such a dichotomy for the rest of it. It's just so much easier just to go along with it when you're in their presence.
Yes.
But I actually don't mind doing those things for him because it gives me my normality. Mm-hmm. So for me, I am a rocket scientist. Mm-hmm. For me, I know I'm a pretty big deal outside of my home. Mm-hmm. And it's not that I'm being modest. It's just, it's where God is.
You can say it. Yeah. You're a rocket scientist. You can say it.
And, you know, people are calling, I'm interviewing. And so I have to manage all of that stuff. And then it's like, when I come home, it gives me the opportunity to be as normal as I'm going to be.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can come in. I got to clean toilets like everybody else. That's not true because I hire somebody.
You don't have time. You don't have time. Yeah.
But you live a normal. Yeah.
I agree. I do think if I didn't have goals and dreams and ambitions outside of my home, if I wasn't active outside of my home, I would hate it. But I do think like, because I do other things, I think of it in terms of, because I care about this person and genuinely respect that person, I think it's like a care thing. Like, it's like, oh, I get to do this for you. I think it's nice. And I don't mind doing it. As a matter of fact, I want to feed you. This is nice, you know?
Yeah, I love cooking. So being that I love cooking, I could actually put in a 10-hour day and come home and cook. Now the catch is, this last guy that I dated cooked as well. And so
was it good though?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Like 15 pounds good while he was here.
Ooh. Oh.
That's very good.
It was good. So, and he's Panamanian. And so he actually cooks. And so we were eating, and he doesn't like to go out. So we were always eating something home cooked.
What happened with him? How did you meet him?
Well, yeah, I want to talk about that. Well, first of all, I want to talk about, it was your suggestion to talk about dating. And I want, that's my first question is, why? Yeah. Why are you so?
So I never get to talk about dating, right? Everybody always wants to know my journey. They want to know my work. They want to know all of that other, and all the other stuff that I do, right? You can actually Google. There's probably, I could think of 15 articles that have been written about me in the last 4 years. Maybe 3 years, 15 articles. That's a lot.
You that can pull is, up yeah, pod, yes.
You know, podcasts, all of that. And you'll hear they never, ever is about my personal. Like, there's a personal side to me, which people don't understand. And I need these young girls to understand that this is your reality. If you don't snag him in college, you may not get him.
Interesting.
It just may not happen. And now I'm 48 and... for whatever reason, what's attracted to me now has been mostly white male.
Hmm. And are you attracted to white men?
Yeah. And what is that like?
Yeah.
Oh, it's real different. Because I be asking all the time, like, you ever dated a black girl before? Because I don't want to be your first. Like, I don't want to have to explain all of our cultural stuff to you. If they've already dated Black women before, then I've tried to go out with them and they treat me amazing. The problem for me is that if we ever try to get sexual, my image of his paleness next to mine affects me. And I need chocolate next to me.
Oh, God.
And so that has been my stopping point.
Oh, I just fell out.
So tell us about the dudes you've dated since you've been divorced.
Tell us about first. So there's this period where you were working really hard and there wasn't time for dating. The decision to get back in the field, and how did you jump back in? Did you get on apps?
So there I was 10 and a half years. I was in a relationship with the guy who adopted my daughter. Him and I started dating when she was 3 months. I was not in school yet. He pushed me, like, go ahead and go back to school. So we were together 10 and a half years. Catch is, our relationship seriously deteriorated. He was a lot older than me. And so his career ended. And when his health started to decline, and so he was going downward, and everything about me was going upward. He started to resent me. And the relationship ended up ending while I was in grad school. So after that, so I have been single now since 2009, so 10 years. During that time, I thought I had gotten engaged, and then that guy was cheating. He's like putting his weir everywhere. I actually moved here to try to be closer to him, and then 2 days after moving, the girl called me and told me that they had been dating the whole time.
Why is it always the girl that calls? What is with these like slinky, shitty dudes who have no balls?
I was like, yo, chick, like, why you ain't tell me that before I put the deposit on the hall, the reception hall? Like, that shit, I was like, that shit non-refundable. Like, y'all don't fucking give me my money back.
Yeah. Did they give you your money back?
We ended up adding up everything, and I ended up getting a little over half of my money back.
Okay, at least
you got
that.
Yeah,
and she was like, I'm not doing
And why
nothing.
Are you putting the money down for the reception hall? Like, where's his money?
It was just so happened that day. Like, the money was due. He was at work. He was like, babe, go ahead and pay it.
Ooh.
I was like, okay, so bad. You know, we have been putting money into an account. It was just weird.
Yes.
So I was really mad. I wasn't mad that he was doing it. Because if that's your choice, that's your choice. I know my worth. Like, I'm worth every problem you're going to have with me. I'm worth every argument. I'm worth all of it.
I need to record that.
Yes.
I know this, right? And so when it happened, I was like, oh, okay. Like, you can have it. And 30 days later, he was calling, like, can we get back together? Like, can we try? And I said,
this reminds me of Why Did I Get Married? The Jill Scott character, the 80-20 rule.
What's the 80-20 rule?
Have you not seen this movie?
I have not seen Why Did I Get Married. Don't judge me.
Taking your black card. Damn it.
Don't judge me. What is the 80-20 rule?
So Jill Scott is in a relationship with a man who does not appreciate her. And she finds out he's cheating on her. He treats her like garbage. And the 80-20 rule is basically that, like, you know, basically at the end of the movie, she says, like, I'm 80 and you went for 20. And, like, the girl that he cheats on her with and leaves her for doesn't cook, doesn't clean, doesn't do anything. And she's skinny and hot. But, like, Jill Scott is Jill Scott. So it's like, and she says, go back to your 20. And I'm like, okay, Jill Scott.
You're only going to find 80% of what you're looking for.
Thank you.
Person.
I didn't actually know how to explain the 80-20 rule.
So you're only going to find the 80%, and you should be okay with settling for not having the 20. In my case, Thomas was gorgeous. He probably was the 20.
I love that we call him Thomas out on the podcast.
I love that his full name is out.
I know.
Thomas, you are a 20.
You are a 20. Okay. And Dr. Horton is a solid 90,
so
I would say.
After going through that and you're like, well, damn, I've been with a 20. How did you jump back into the dating pool? And how are you jumping back in, navigating, being like, nah, this person is a 20. if someone's intimidated by me, no. Like, how are you navigating
dating
with your standards?
Okay, so that happened in 2014, and I haven't hit anything again until 2019.
This is new boo.
Yeah, the new boo. But yeah, so I got through Thomas in the first year of being back in Louisiana with the Friends with Benefits. It was a guy I had had a Friends with Benefits before. I called him up and was like, can we have the same situation? He was like, bet, you the move back home? I was like, yup, hour from you. He was like, bet, we could do this. So for a year, we saw each other every other weekend and did what grown-ups do. And we also played video games because I like Mortal Kombat.
Yeah,
it is such a fun game.
And I'm an Xbox player, so we would play video games. We'd hang out. We'd go to dinner. And people kept saying, y'all are in a relationship. And it was like, no, we're not. Because we never defined it like that. Because you are defining it like that and putting your expectations on what's happening between us. That's not how it works. And when it ended, it ran its course. By that time, I felt like my heart had been healed, right? And I wanted to get back into the real pool of dating.
So what did that look like then?
And, well, what did it look like? But also, how did you navigate being like, nah, no one else is going to define this but us? Especially coming out of, like, a marriage that you were very young and it seems like it was more your parents' suggestion of, like, defining what your relationship is. How did you get to the point where in your friends and benefit situation that, A, you had the autonomy to be like, that you were like, this is just what it is and no one else can define it but us?
It was more like because we had interconnections with our family. And so we would actually be in the same room together, right? So it took other people a little bit longer to accept where we were and what we were doing. And, you know, I've seen him with other people. He's seen me with other people. He actually likes the post of me in the boo, you know, it's like that. But that was another thing. I was also very private before. Nothing ever made social media. And I was like, why am I tucking my life away for other people?
Why were you?
I don't know. I don't know if it was just a matter of, you know, sometimes you have to protect yourself. So if you don't have the energy all the time to be defending what is happening, even though you shouldn't have to defend it, it was just easier not to.
So you're decidedly not private right now. Like, what are you getting out of, you know, is it just because you felt like you had to be private before? Is it just more your vibe to be open about this part of your life?
I think now I'm a little bit more open because I need people to understand that I'm a whole person. And so before, like I would go places and I'd be wanting a drink when we're done. And, you know, I got to be whispering to people and, you know, they got to be pouring my liquor in a Coke can. And I'm like, dang, I just want to be able to be part of, I want all of me to be able to come forth. And so now when you are looking at Renee Horton and you invite me to speak, you know that you know, there's a whole person that's actually coming and not just this piece that went public first, right? And so a lot more open.
Has that been a struggle with being all of you, of people just wanting to be like, you're a scientist, you should present in a certain way?
And also in Louisiana, that's exactly what I wanted to ask. But is it also difficult, not just as a scientist, but also in the place that you're in?
Yeah, I was in Alabama and it was difficult in Alabama, even though there are a ton of smart people in Alabama. It was still difficult there. It was difficult in Alabama because the ratio was like 7 to 1. So 7 women for every 1 male, which made it really hard because they have a pick and they would multi-dating, not being honest and open about it, that kind of thing. I was kicking it with this dude and my sorrow was like, this is her boyfriend. And I'm like, oh, snap.
Oh, shit.
I'm like, oh, I don't even know what to do. I was like, oh, okay. And she was like, yeah. And, you know, I'm texting him. I was like, yo, I'm sitting here with your girlfriend. Like, we've been kicking it for 7 months. I'm sitting here with your girlfriend. He was like, well, she's not technically my girlfriend, but we've been kicking it. He had been kicking it with her almost 2 years. And so for her, she was defining it as something else. And so for me, that's really important that even the people that I'm dating, that we have clear definitions.
I mean, truly the bar is on the floor. The bar, like, literally just saying, I'm dating somebody else.
Well, I just read something.
That's called a liar.
Online that they're like, instead of asking a man, like, are you single? You should say, does anyone think that they're dating you?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, that's such
that's
a good
a
question.
Question.
That's a better question.
It's like, harder to lie. Yeah.
It's a harder to lie. It's like, does anyone think that they're in a relationship with you? Kicking it for 2 years.
Yep.
Yeah, when you pose it that way, they have to really stop and think about at that moment, right? Like, yo, yeah, there is somebody, you know?
Yeah, so the person the I've been I'm fucking for 2 years.
Dating, yeah.
Yeah, that one.
That one. Who lives in my house.
Yes.
We have a deposit on a hall.
Yes.
Sorry.
Yeah, that right there. And literally when we finally broke up, I was calling people like, yo, are y'all fucking with or without a condom? I just need to know, oh, like, how many STDs I need to go, you know, how many tests I need to go take, right? I called 6 women.
Woo!
And one was like, oh my God, I had a miscarriage. I was like, y'all was not using condoms. So I was like, great. So yeah, Thomas was a busy little bitch.
Mm-hmm.
Damn, Thomas. How have you managed to keep your heart open through all of this and still be open for the possibility of, like, meeting someone great?
I've had my heart broken a couple of times, and I do get hurt. The catch is, when you truly understand the definition of what is happening between you and another person, you usually don't fall in love.
Explain that?
Explain that.
When we are dealing with somebody, right, and we just all into him and he all into us, we've allowed our heart to say, this is going to go somewhere. And then we look like boo-boo the fool when 6 months later or 9 months later, he ain't really into that because he's been dating somebody else too. But we never talked about that. We never talked about that, right? And so I took a different approach to dating now. I'm just very open and where I am. But I also am, I spent 90 days revamping who I was as a person. When I graduated, in between working for NASA and graduation, I was homeless and went back to live with my parents. And during that time, I used those 90 days to do what I call my 90-day transformation. One of those things was I was praying about love, right? Because with love, most of the times we have expectations. With our love. If I love you, if I say I love you, we are always expecting that other person to say it back, right? You're waiting for it, right? Whether it's 2 months from now or whatever, you're waiting for that. Well, the catch is, if I give you a gift, should I be waiting for a gift back?
No.
Yeah.
Love, my love is a gift. That's the way I feel. My love is a gift. And so if I do love you, I do want to give it to you. But I also prayed that I wanted to be able to love people without expectation. That was the first thing. I also wanted to love people the way that they loved me. So if you loved me as a friends with benefits, right, I wanted to be able to stay in that zone too. I didn't want to be able to push you somewhere you didn't want to go. Because when you start pushing people into places they don't really want to go, that's where the hurt comes from. Because I've just pushed you, and now I've backed you into a corner. And I don't want to back anybody into a corner. I want whoever is with me to be walking freely with me down whatever path we're going to go.
Earlier you said, if you're smart, something like, if you're smart, you marry him in college. But you sound like you have a profoundly different experience and understanding of love than someone who did marry somebody in college. Do you think that this advice is good?
I don't know. I've always been a flower child. So my love, like, I see love differently, right? I think because I love John and he is my everything does not mean that Barry, I can't love Barry too. People think that you can only love one person. But yet and still, we're allowed to have that one partner that you love, but you're allowed to love your mama, your daddy, your sister, your brother. You're allowed to love all those other people. And love does not have to be an intimate type of thing. And when I tell young women to make sure that they get them earlier, it's really because a lot of men are intimidated by successful women. And also, I deal with right now, having to have my assistant send somebody a schedule for a month to say, this is when Renee is available. I wouldn't want somebody to do that to me, and I don't have a choice. So when I say do it early and then, you know, have that person come up with you, that's what I mean by that.
You mentioned that you, about love, that love isn't just, you can love a lot of people. What is your feeling about open relationships? Have you been in one? And is that something that you...
My marriage was an open relationship.
The first one?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, your only one, your only marriage.
My only marriage. Look at her face. Like, what?
I know. Yeah. I'm surprised.
My marriage is an open relationship.
And it still didn't work? Okay.
And it still did not work, but it did not work because we were young. It really didn't work because I think we had the right principles in place, but we were really young.
This is a very early time.
We needed to focus on goals.
Yes.
Right? And we couldn't do that. So now it's like I need to be goal driven because that's who I am. But to be able to get to the level that I am, I had goals and each one of them had to be met. And then, you know, then you're on to the next. That's how you become successful. When we were young, we just didn't have that.
This was a time when open relationships were not openly talked about. So how did you guys even communicate this to each other?
Overseas, it's really different. Overseas, it was open. The military, all kinds of stuff was going down. And it wasn't like, you know, it was just like, yeah, I ain't coming home tonight because I'm going to so-and-so's crib. And he's like, oh, all right, well, who got the kids? Like, who picked the kids up? So
he was okay with you, much as you were open with him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was actually really good for us. But like I said, with that, because we didn't know how to truly handle everything else is where we had our downfall, right? Like the marriage was there. We should have also been focusing on, understanding like you do need to put savings up and you need to be able to do this. So whenever something tragic would happen for us, those would be the things that would, you know, cause us to crumble. Mm-hmm. And when we moved back to the States, he was like, yeah, I just want it to be you and I. And it was like, oh, okay. We were both good. You know, I was good with that. He was a cheater.
I see.
When we got back to the States, he no longer wanted it to be open, but he still wanted to do what he wanted to do. And I would have never gone for that.
Of course not.
Currently dating, and it's open as well. And so until somebody says that doesn't work for me, but the guy that I'm currently dating, he does have priority as far as my schedule is concerned and that kind of thing. Like he's the one that if he was to call and say, I want to be there on the 15th of March, then, you know, he will be the one that would be with me on the 15th of March. I'm getting another award and he's already said, like, I want to be there at the award ceremony. So he's already said that so that there's not somebody else there at the award ceremony.
So you need someone that's going to be able to deal with your schedule. And the inverse, do you ever think that you, I mean, and this is such a strange question to ask, but I think as women, we have to deal with this a lot, especially if you want to meet a partner and you want to date. I know this too, because I'm very busy, but you're like, at what point do I like say, crap, if I really want this, I have to like build the time for it. And how do you navigate that feeling of being like, I need to make time in my schedule and my life to let this happen.
So that's where the whole new concept of dating came in for me. I had a hysterectomy at the beginning of the year, and so I was off a couple of weeks. And like literally, I was on Facebook. I'm not on there that much. And this guy was like cute. And I was like, dang. So I dropped in his inbox and he responded back.
Slid in them DMs.
I was all up in the DM, girl. But we talked back, and within 12 hours, we were FaceTiming. And it was like, yo, this is like serious. And then within 72 hours, we had decided I was going to come visit him. So we ran a background check. We did the checks on each other. We did all of that. I gave pertinent information. My girlfriends was like, are you serious? You going to this dude's house? I was like, this dude about to give me his, about to give me his address. Like, if he going to kill me, y'all got the address.
And I was like, at least you can find the body.
I'm going. And I went and stayed 5 days in Atlanta.
Ooh. Now,
by the fourth day, I was ready to go home. So the next day when they got up, and then, now mind you, I can't even do nothing because I had a hysterectomy. So we there, and it's truly no sexual intercourse, no nothing.
And did he know that before you came out?
Yes. 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 And he paid for the ticket.
So he knowingly paid for no sex. This is an interesting man.
Well, she's a badass.
She's a badass. This is Dr. Harry Dr. Norton. H. Yes.
So he's a little bit of a narcissist when I got there and a little controlling. But he was in a process of grieving his mother's death. He just needed some normality in his life. And I went and offered that. And that's where we were. And it was really good. And so that was my 5-day date. I put that on. That was on Instagram. Like, I'm talking about, like, if I die, this is where I'm going. Like that. But and it was what I call my 5-day date experiment. And I talked about that with women for a while after that, because they were like, what was that like? And, you know, you're really letting your guard down when you let somebody in your home. And it completely changed my perception on dating, because immediately I understood that if a man wants to, he will.
Because he invited you for the 5 days.
Yeah. And that was him wanting to get to know me. So to listen to guys and all the other crap that I've dealt with, and I'm just kicking myself in the butt now, right? Because it's like, I really wasted a lot of time, because a lot of those people could have been filtered out.
Yep.
You know, why can't we go on a date? Why you can't come over? I don't get that. He makes sure, even after I got back, we tried, but he has a 4-year-old and I have a 3-year-old grandchild. So I'm done. I feel like I'm done raising kids. And he doesn't want a stepmom. He wants a second mother. That wasn't going to work. And so, but it changed my perception on a man.
Because it's like, if you can't handle my schedule, you can't handle me. Because this is just who I am and where I'm at. And if you're interested, you'll be able to handle all of these things.
You'll be willing to adapt. And so the next guy I started dating, which is the current guy I'm dating, he was here in New Orleans. And we knew he was going to, his contract was going to end. And his contract was going to end in October. And when we started, we met in April. We knew the contract was ending in October and that he would be leaving and moving back to Atlanta. He quit the job 2.5 months before October was over with, but he stayed anyway. He made the sacrifice to stay in New Orleans anyway to give me the time to see if this is something we wanted to really do even long distance.
So this is, I love that it's ending on a hopeful note of like, this is someone who's here and present. And we end every episode by asking our guest, what's your secret to like thriving in this world and feeling like you're operating at your best, most highest level?
My happiness. When I went through the 90-day transformation, I prayed that my happiness was internal and not connected to anything external. And so when I am thriving the most and I am the most successful, that's usually when my happiness meter is like in the 90s or above. And I've had instances where it's hit more than 100.
Ooh, yes.
So that's my secret.
Dr. Horton, thank you so much for talking to us. Do you have like your 90-day transformation? Is that a book?
We're working on it. We're actually working on it, on that book. So the children's books are out, and we'll release the third one next year for the kids' book. That series is Dr. H Explores the Universe. You can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, all the normal places. And then we have a poetry book. I wrote it 10 years ago and released it 10 years ago. So March will be 10 years, and we're going to re-release it in March. With some updates in it. And then the 90-day transformation will come out as well.
And what's your, if people want to find you and learn more about your work in STEM and your books and all the things that you're up to, where can they get that information?
Renee Horton, PhD. That's Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. I'm not usually on Twitter, but Twitter. So all of those, you can find us there. And then the book, Dr. H Explores, she has her own page as well. So Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter as well. You can DM me in any of those. and we'll answer. And then we have a webpage, ReneeHortonPhD.com. And then there's DrHExplores.com.
Awesome.
As web pages as well.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time and for your gems of knowledge.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Oh my God.
Shyla, you are like, you're so excited and happy
I'm
right now.
I'm so inspired by this lady because
she's a badass.
Because, okay, so here's the thing. I think that Black women are special creatures. Like, I truly think that there is something divine about Black women. And this goes
Absolutely.
For every Black woman that I know. This goes for my mother, for my grandmother, for my sisters,
There's
for
you. There's
divinity
in every Black woman
walking
this earth.
For our producer, Stephanie. There is divinity because I'm just like, no one understands the difficulty. And like, in ways that, like, no one, you can't understand it. You know, you're already a woman and then you Black. Like, truly, to be able to walk the earth in a commanding, decisive, I matter. I'm important.
Unapologetic.
Unapologetic. This is, I could be a better person. I could learn how to love me. Her 90-day transformation.
What I love is you could tell that she's still, like, thinking about these things and, like, working on herself and questioning and figuring out, like, how can I love deeper? How can I accept people? How can I accept myself? And then it's dealing with that. I mean, every episode I talk about how I take notes, but literally there's no room left on my page because it's all notes. And for me, I want to jump into the word of the week because there's so many things that were words that were dropped. But one of the big things that she said is, I know my worth and I know I'm worth every problem you're going to have with me. I was like, that ain't a motherfucking word.
That
my
ain't
God.
A motherfucking word.
I'm worth every problem that you're going to have with me. Because it's not going to be easy. Like, recognizing, like, I'm not easy.
Yeah.
There's going to be problems. And those problems are still worth it because I'm me.
Do you know, I have to give it up for Bay right now. Because this is, I've learned a lot about love from my husband. And I really feel like I got to give him the props. You know, like, I remember one of the first things, like, one of the first times we hung out, like, all weekend, like, he was just at my apartment, would not leave, and I was just moody because I'm a moody person, and he annoyed me. He's like annoying. So he annoyed me for something because he's very, like, particular, and he's like anal, you know. So he, like, annoyed me for something, and I was just like, just leave, like, just go, like, I want to be by myself right now. And he was like, no, I'm not leaving. And we're in New York. He could just get on a train and go home. And he lives on his own. And he was just like, no, I want to hang out. And I was just like, why aren't you either afraid or, like, crawling away from my bad mood and from my attitude? And he's like, you just have an attitude right now, but it'll go away and then we'll keep hanging out. And then it did. And I was just like, I've never felt so accepted and loved by just someone not being afraid of my mood. Someone just being like, yeah, you're moody right now, but I like you and I want to keep hanging out and we're going to keep hanging out.
Just loving you. I mean, I remember, and this is something that has stayed with me and has been a barometer of, like, the type of, like, love I want. I remember when you first told me that you were married.
Yeah.
And I was like, to this dude that you just started dating.
Yeah.
It was a surprise. But then we talked about it, and I remember you saying it was a phone call, and I, like, can picture me being in my living room in New Orleans, mm-hmm. and you said, this man loves all of me in a way that it teaches me to love myself more.
Yeah.
And I was like, God damn.
That's
beautiful.
Yes.
Like, that's gold.
You know, relationships, like a lot of people say, are mirrors to you. And, you know, what do you do when you look in the mirror and you don't like it? You know, like she was saying, when someone actually loves you, right? When they're not asking anything of you, when they say, I love you, and they're not waiting to hear it back. They just, that's how they feel. And they think the best of you. They're like, you're moody, but you're just being, he calls me a demon, I'll just say it. Like, his nickname for me is Demon. Deems, right? Like, I'm being a demon right now.
I did not
which
know Deem
like,
stood for
what
demon.
I
thought it was a
no,
cute
it was
nickname.
Deem stands for demon, which is what he calls me. But I think think that that's also loving, because like, what is a demon? It's like possesses you, right? It's not you. It's a bad spirit that possesses you. But you are an angel. You are the best. You're amazing. You're my partner. I love you. You're being a demon. Please stop. You know, and I'm just like, he made me love myself, frankly. You know, this is truly, it's been a profound experience, you know. But what I do want to say about, I don't have a word of the week, you know, I'm dead. I'm done.
Just keep talking. You're trapping so many words yourself right now.
But what I have to say about Dr. Hearn, when she said that she's trapped by her success, this thing kind of, if we could have gotten into anything more in this conversation, it would have been about that. Because it's something, this year was the busiest year of my life. And there were moments where I felt so miserable because I was so like trapped by work. And she clearly gets a lot of joy and excitement and love out of the things that she does. But I think for me, defining for myself, what does success really mean? And does being so busy that I'm miserable mean success? It does not. No. It can't. To me, choice, freedom, having the freedom to see bae, do what I want, hang out with my friends, like freedom and time to me is real success. And if Lauren, don't ever let me get to the point where I'm so busy that I feel trapped.
Yeah.
That success means more to me than my own time and my own freedom and my own sanity.
Y'all, this
was great.
This is great. This is a real special one. And I just, you know, thank you guys for listening. And yeah, I feel like, you can tell when we end and we're like in our heads and thinking about stuff.
I'm even looking down and like shook.
And there's a disconnect when we say like goodbye to you guys. Yeah. So I hope that you're also in your heads from this episode too.
Yeah. You get as much out of these episodes. Yeah. I mean, I hope that you get a lot, but truly Lauren and I do it for us. Yeah. We're just like, ooh.
So we hope that you're in your heads too. Yeah. And we just can't wait for you to join us next week. Thank you guys for listening.
Bye.
Bye.
We are your hosts, Charla Lauriston
and Lauren Domino.
The Secret Lives of Black Women is a production of Stitcher.
Our producer is Stephanie Kariuki.
Our editor is Gianna Palmer.
The show is recorded and mixed by Andy Christens.
Special thanks to our chief content officer, Chris Bannon, and to Brendan Burns, who made our theme music.
Make sure you follow us on Instagram and Twitter at the SLBW. See you later.